This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. Martin Kilcoyne is going to join us at 11. So much to discuss. The prodigal, I do not like that the top two free agents in baseball still haven't signed contracts. I am not one who begrudges high player salaries. The collusion is what's going on to is going to drive a work stoppage at the end of the current baseball CBA. That's an interesting thought. I know a lot of people feel that way. I actually kind of don't mind the fact that the money is not flowing right now in Major League Baseball. We'll get Plowsy and Brian's. I know Brian's. Give them all the money. That's all right. We'll take a short. We are thrilled to have on our airwaves right now the most knowledgeable college basketball guy I know. Actually, he just dropped. It's going to be Mike DeCourcy in just a moment. Let's see. The guy who hates this free agent situation the most is Mike Trout. If Harper and Machado can get 300, he'd be a shoo-in for 400. That's just smart business. You're right. How about that, Plowsy? He's absolutely right about that.
No, I agree. I still think Trout, with his overall package, he's the five-tool player. I still think he'll get his 250-plus. I'm with Brian. You give the guy the money. They paid for it through arbitration, so I think they deserve the $300 million.
All right, we'll see how the rest of the country feels. But let's talk a little college basketball with the best in the business. He is Mike DeCourcy. Mike, great to be with you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. So much to discuss. I love, you can read it on Twitter, TSN Mike, the story about Reed Travis. And boy, did you do an unbelievable job with this. It's your pinned tweet, but I read the whole thing last night that Kentucky finally has a veteran, but he's also a one-and-done guy, too.
Yes, and he has some of the same problems that a one-and-done guy has. There some of the graduate transfers that you see around the country join programs that are desperate for production, or maybe the player is not an elite talent and is there only to provide complimentary minutes or something like that. But in Reed's case, I mean, he was a high-performing player at Stanford on middling teams, let's say, and he comes to Kentucky where they kind of need to win every game. I mean, no one's going to win every game, but they certainly can't afford to lose many to be who they need to be to please their fan base. And so you're seeing some of those same issues. Struggles at times to stay where he needs to be on defense. Struggles at times to execute some certain techniques, ball screen defense, that kind of thing. And it comes from having been in a circumstance where they weren't a great program. And so maybe the fact that he was averaging a double-double, some of the other stuff lagged. And I don't know whether a case was made against it or whether it was tolerated because he was averaging a double-double, but he needs to play tighter for them to be successful than he has through the first half of the season.
There's a great stat, and I think you may have retweeted it too, that every team in the top 10 of the AP poll has at least two players on its roster that were ranked in the top 100 prospects. So, you know, right, we talk about coaches coaching them up and everything. Bottom line is, you better have a couple of top 100 players or you're not going to be a top 10 team.
There's truth to that, but the point behind that tweet was that there is one exception.
Tennessee, yeah.
And Tennessee is the exception, which is a phenomenal fact. They've got two of the top 25 or 30 players now, and one of the top five. Grant Williams is right now one of the leading candidates. One of the leading candidates for National Player of the Year. I did a midseason All-America team just this week that's on sportingnews.com now, and he was on our first team. And I contribute to the Naismith National Defensive Player of the Year Award. And when I sent in a recent midseason ballot for, you know, I can't say that Grant necessarily will be on the midseason list when it comes out, but he was on my ballot. So, I mean, I don't think there's another player in the country who would be a National Player of the Year candidate and a National Defensive Player of the Year candidate. That's how great he's been, and he's somebody that was not highly recruited at all. Came, you know, there's a zillion ACC schools in North Carolina, right? And he came right out of there to go across the mountains over to Knoxville to play for the Vols.
Hmm. I want to get your take on some of our local teams. I'm sure, Mike, you saw Travis Ford play as a member of the Kentucky Wildcats, and nobody played at a higher skill level, that great touch, the way he saw the game, just such an unbelievable finesse player. And yet he has a Billiken team that leads the A-10 in points allowed per game. They're top 20 in defensive efficiency at KenPom.com. They're doing it with defense and hard-nosed play. Have you taken a look at them, and do you believe this is an NCAA tournament team?
Well, I actually think I saw them play their worst game. I saw the Pitt game. They certainly managed to make a game of it, but Pitt was in control of that game for a lot of the game. And at the time, it seemed like a real calamity for the Billikens. And now, in retrospect, it just seems like a missed opportunity because Pitt's played really well. And obviously that was an example of Pitt playing very well. But they since have gone to Iowa and nearly won, and then beat Florida State and Louisville at home. So not so bad now. I mean, I guess maybe the SIU game would have been a bigger mark on their record. But when you're in the circumstance that they're in right now, you know, they've got good quality wins like Seton Hall, you know, some of the league wins that are, you know, or Butler is another one that they have on their resume. And, you know, Butler won a big game last night at DePaul. And, when you're a team like St. Louis, you know, you can't just root for the Billikens now. I mean, you got to root for Seton Hall and Butler to win every game they can because you need and Oregon State as well, because you need those wins to be inflated from where they stand at the moment. Butler especially. You know, Seton Hall's sort of chugging along, and they're kind of in and out of it being a quality win. Butler needs to rally a little bit. Oregon State, the whole Pac-12 is a disaster, but if Oregon State, they had a great weekend last weekend. If they continued on and, you know, finished top three in the Pac-12, it certainly would help. And then you've got to take care of your own business inside your league, which they're certainly doing beautifully now, but they have to continue to do that. And at the end, you know, I'm a believer – that if you win the regular season in certain leagues, and the A-10 would certainly be one of those, and you have a respectable non-conference, which the Billikens certainly have, if you do those two things. Now, when I talk about winning the league, I'm talking about winning it with an attractive record. I'm not talking about, you know, going 12-6. But if, you know, if you win the A-10 at 14-4 or something like that, you know, I think you're a tournament team with what the Billikens did outside the conference.
Every once
we'll
in a while,
see whether I'm right.
Yeah, every once in a while, Mike, because the Missouri Valley Conference is a nice conference and it's based in St. Louis and they're great people, I'll run into people and say, why isn't SLU playing in the Missouri Valley Conference? What do you think? The A-10 gets three in, the Valley gets in one normally, correct?
Normally, yeah. I mean, I think last year was a year in which I believe the A-10 got two and needed an upset in the conference tournament final to get two. I'd say over the last 3-4 years, maybe five, we've seen the Atlantic 10 decline a little bit along with the Mountain West. Those two leagues in particular that were on a certain echelon have probably taken a half step back or a full step back from where they were. But at the same time, you know, I still believe that those are quality leagues. And if you go out and you go you know, what, 5-5 or whatever in your non-conference and lose to, you know, to a bunch of SIUs, so to speak, and then you go out in the league and go 14-4. I'm not talking about that, but, you know, St. Louis was good outside the conference. They weren't great, but they were good. And I think that if you then go out and win a league like the Atlantic 10 or the Mountain West, I'm a believer in that. And, I wish that the committee were more invested in that. You know, I think the one thing about the NIT automatic bid that you get for winning the regular season now, I think sometimes they look at that as a consolation prize, and they don't feel so bad if they leave out a league champion. And I do think that I think that you need to invest more worth in that, more respect in that, because it's not easy to do. A couple of years ago, Monmouth went out. And of course, the Metro Atlantic is not a league on the level of the Atlantic 10, but it's a solid league. And they went out and they went 17-3 in their league, and in mostly road or neutral games, maybe Notre Dame, Georgetown, can't remember who else, they had like four high major wins. And the committee excluded them on the basis of, well, you know, you lost three league road games to teams that weren't great. They were 17-3. Come on, we got to do better at this. I know the committee members, most of them well. I respect what they do. I know how hard they work at it. But I just think that sometimes their priorities, the way the selection process works, I think sometimes they miss on what's important. I don't think dominance. Like if the Billikens go 17-1, and I think they play 18 games. There's so many leagues, I don't remember how many everyone plays, but you know, if it's an 18 game schedule and they go 17-1, I mean, that's an automatic. I mean, that you wouldn't be able to keep them out for me. But you know, others don't feel the same way.
Let's talk Mizzou. Undefeated in December, winless in January, all three SEC games are double digit losses. What are you seeing with Konzo Martin's program right about now?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I thought that, first of all, I thought that when they got to January, I thought they were in as good a shape as they could possibly be, especially given, you know, the obstacle of having to play without Jonte Porter. And, you know, Tennessee's a great team. And they played the first, I don't know what the time was, 12 minutes, 15 minutes, played them really well. And nothing has seemed the same since. I'm not sure exactly why. And South Carolina is messing up the entire SEC. So, you know, I wouldn't feel too badly about that. But last night, kind of inexplicable. I mean, they weren't even there. You know, to lose by 10 at home to a team that's not good. I mean, they're not awful, but they're not. Well, let's say not real good. Not great language. But, I mean, it's not a significant team, Alabama. They've won some good games. They've lost a lot. To lose by 10 at home to that is a shocking result. And I'm not sure exactly where they go from here. After the Xavier and Illinois wins, I thought they were in great shape, and I didn't expect they necessarily would make the tournament. I thought they were moving in the right direction. And now they're in a circumstance where, that their schedule starts to really toughen it. A&M's not a very good team again, but they're competitive and they'll be playing at home, and Arkansas's a tough place to play. LSU just went out and smoked Ole Miss on their own floor, and then you got to play at Auburn. So they're in a really tough spot right now, and some of it is, you know, of their own creation. I mean, it's still going to be a tough spot if they'd won yesterday, last night was a disappointing enough result to make you wonder about where they go from here.
You know, it goes back to what we said at the beginning of this interview about talent. I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that they got a bunch of pretty good players, but they're in a conference where Rick Barnes and John Calipari are recruiting people. And I don't know if you can be a top echelon team in the SEC without just a bunch of pretty good players, as much as I like and respect Konzo.
Well, no, I mean, like I didn't, you know, when they had Jonte, I expected them to be competitive to make the tournament and maybe win a game. But when you lose him, you know, now you're in a circumstance where you're really having to try to stitch it together. I mean, he was, you know, you're talking about a guy who's a massive physical presence, and add to that an uncommonly skilled player at that size. the guy who could handle the basketball at 7 foot, pass it, shoot it, and block shots as well, and do all of those things in a very unconventional sort of style, really made them a different team. And to be without him now, I honestly was surprised they were able to do the things that they were when they got to 9-3. And so, you know, if you're asking, was I more, surprised by 9-3 than I am by 0-3? I'd say I was more surprised by 9-3. But last night's performance was probably the exception to all of that. It just doesn't add up to where they were, when they really torched the Illini in the bragging rights game, or the same with Xavier when they played the home game.
All right, then we have Illinois. You just brought them up, and out of nowhere last night, they blast a pretty good Minnesota team, 95-68. There are times, even when they lost to Georgetown this season, where I thought, boy, there is some talent in this. Io DeSumo is really good. They got a good recruiting class. I know the record right now is dismal, 5-12 and 1-5 in the Big Ten. I still think their future is not bad.
Oh, it doesn't. I mean, they have to make it not bad, which, last night was a huge step toward that, to not capitulating. One thing I will say definitively, and I don't know how they got to this, but they played an absurd schedule for the iteration of the program that they're presenting. To come off a season where you were lower echelon in the Big Ten, and then to go and play, I mean, they may have played the literal most difficult non-conference schedule in the country. It didn't add up. And so a team that probably should be 10-8 or I guess it would be closer to 9-8 or 10-7. I mean, a team that should have that kind of record because you played a 10-7 schedule instead is 5-12, and it looks worse than it is. And they were very competitive in a lot of their games. You mentioned Georgetown. When they went to Maui, they were very competitive in most of the games out there, at least for periods. And then they came home and they're playing multiple league games early in the season, and neither of them was really conducive to winning. And then you come back from that, and you're playing Vegas and Missouri. There was way too much for this team at this stage. And I know Maui's a great trip, and maybe the fans wanted to go, but this would have been a good year to say, can we get out of this? Because they walked in as the weakest team from a development standpoint in the entire Maui field, and it showed.
I want to get your take on Zion Williamson at the next level. I know where everybody's saying freak of nature, 6'7", 280 pounds, that kind of vertical jump, but no jump shot. Is he an absolute superstar, NBA all-star, or is there any concerns that he'd be technically an undersized four with not great range? What do you think?
Well, I would say, first of all, that I wouldn't agree that he has no jump shot. I mean, he's made 9 3-pointers so far. A non-shooter doesn't make 9 3. And it's not, look, that doesn't make him Steph Curry now. I'm not trying to argue that. But a non-shooter doesn't make any. And doesn't try any. And his coach says, don't ever do that because it's going to look bad and it's not going to help us win. But if you look back to Draymond Green when he was a freshman at Michigan State, you know how many three-pointers he made in 37 games?
How many?
He made one. You know how many he made as a sophomore in 37 games? He made two.
Okay.
So I will say that when I look at him, I don't look at a guy and say, oh, my God, what? That shot looks like Jim Furyk's golf swing. No, it doesn't. No, it looks like a shot. I mean, he's not good at it yet, but he's got a chance to be good if he works at it. And the guy I see is working hard to improve and will work. Most improvement from a skill standpoint comes in the off season. And when he gets through this, I think he will continue to improve. So I look at a guy who has a chance to be a shooter, And when you talk about undersized foreman, he is that, and that's what he is. Anybody that tells you he's a guard or a wing isn't watching the games at all. But he's about, you know, he's within he's about the same size as Draymond, and he's got about 15 inches of vertical leap over Dre, maybe 10, and he's got 50 pounds of strength. No, you know, look, there may be a way to train his body to get him down to 265, 270, but he's not, Duke's never published his body fat percentage, but you look at him and tell him he's fat. I mean, he's rock solid. He looks like he was carved out of the side of a mountain. He's not normal. And so when I hear people compare him to Barkley, I laugh. Barkley carried 265 at times as a collegian. And you know, although the word fat is overused relative to him then, I mean, that wasn't all muscle. When they compare him to Rodney Rogers, who was a wonderful college player, Rodney Rogers played below the rim for the most part. Zion, I believe, has already blocked more shots in his in this season than Rodney blocked in his best season, and we've got half the year to go. And he was 50 pounds lighter than Zion. There's never been anybody like him. And when I say that, people get crazy because they think I mean he's better than everyone, and that's not it. I mean, he's not. When people compare him to LeBron, I laugh because LeBron was at the same age about 35 to 40 pounds lighter and was the single most skilled basketball player at that age that's ever lived. So, no, he's not LeBron, but he is different than anybody you've seen.
Yeah, well, somewhere between Draymond and LeBron, that's an NBA All-Star, I think.
You know, I think he will be, without a doubt, an NBA All-Star. Now, he's going to have to defend at a high level, and as a explosive defender, as a guy who can get onto the ball either as a shot blocker or as a stealer, as a thief. I don't think that sounds good. But as a guy who steals the basketball, he does that well now. So it's just a question of adding in the technique of and continuing to develop the technique of guarding ball screens and hedging and blocking out and all those sorts of things. But he's going to be a terrific NBA player. Although I will say that, Kevin, I went much further into that with you than I would with most people, because this is not the time of year when I like to discuss NBA prospects. For me, it's like once the season starts, I don't care what a guy's quote-unquote draft status is. I care about whether or not he's going to win games for his college team.
Frank Cusimano with Mike DeCourcy. A couple of minutes left on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. I want to ask you about Virginia. They're 16-0, kind of a similar season to last year. I'm wondering, is there anything about this club, are they a little more athletic, that you think that, hey, this could be their year to make an NCAA tournament run?
Well, I think that – well, give me an example of how you think they're more dynamic.
I can't.
Well, that's why it's hard to say. It's hard to say whether or not any particular team is ready for an NCAA tournament run, Frank. I think some of it comes down to matchups, and some of it comes down to health, and some of it comes down to that moment when you have the ball in your hands and the game in your hands. I'm doing a story about Notre Dame and their 1974 victory over UCLA. We get the 45th anniversary of that game that ended UCLA's 88-game winning streak. And they were down in that game 70-59 with 3 minutes to play. And they came back and won anyway. So a lot of it is about seizing the moment as well as whether or not your team is fit to do that.
All right, one final thought. We listened and read about some of the Adidas reps during those hearings over the summer, where the one Adidas rep said that he kind of apologized to Bill Self for not delivering a certain player to Kansas. He went to another school, and then all of a sudden it just all went away. What's going on with that? Will anything ever amount from that hearing?
Well, first of all, let's not say it went away. I mean, the first thing you have to remember is that there are three men who have been found guilty from that trial, and they are awaiting sentencing. And so for them, it hasn't gone away.
No.
You know, for Kansas, it hasn't gone away because Silvio De Sousa was withheld from competing as a result of things that were said during that trial, that were testified toward during that trial. So from that standpoint, you know, it's not gone away either. Now, Seth Davis from The Athletic reported this week that they will request that Silvio become reinstated to compete. But that request doesn't necessarily have to be honored. And if it is honored, and I think it might be, it may not be until he has served an even longer, quote-unquote, suspension than he has. I mean, he's already missed about half a year. He has not been suspended during that period, but that's why I said, quote. But the NCAA may decide that he needs to. I mean, if you look at Auburn this year, which has back two players that were withheld last year, and the NCAA ruled at a point late last year that they could return, but only after they finished that year on the sideline, and they are back. We may see the same happen with De Sousa. So it from that standpoint, it's continuing. But what I've tried to tell people about that circumstance is that in that hearing, Kansas was presented by the U.S. government as the victim in that case. And the testimony of T.J. Gasnola, who was the government's star witness, was that Kansas, and in particular the coaching staff, was not aware of the activities that he admitted to that were in connection with Kansas. So I still think that if the NCAA comes at Kansas, and I suspect that they are working on a case now or will at some point, then I think that Kansas will defend itself by saying we were the victim. This person said we didn't know, and whatever might have happened that was against NCAA rules is not our fault, and is not, you know, and we are the victim of that. And I think that case might hold up. I was one of the few people who thought that Carolina, relative to the academic issue, was not going to probably be punished because it didn't fit into the NCAA's handbook. And I think that the Kansas's ability to present itself as a victim here might get them off the hook. I know that Mizzou fans don't want to hear that because I presented the same information to the Tiger clubs in Kansas City back in October. And I still, you know, and that was before the official finding of guilt for the three men. So, you know, I still think, Frank, that's where it could end up. Maybe Kansas gets some punishment, and if indeed De Sousa is found to have been ineligible, and that there's been no finding about that, they may have to make some modification to an 18 Final Four. But I don't know that they're necessarily going down hard here as a result of the way that case was presented and adjudicated.
Mike, great stuff. We really appreciate your time. Follow him on Twitter, TSN Mike. He's the best in the business. We really appreciate your time. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Frank. Always a pleasure.
All right. Mike DeCourcy joining us. Before we go to break, quick word about the Bomberito Automotive family. They sponsor the show content. Go to bomberito.com for more information. They sell more cars than anybody in the state of Missouri. That's because their service is spectacular and their selection with 20 new car locations, 9 pre-owned car locations, is the absolute best. Martin, when we come back.